Shalom liYehudim, shalom lebnei Noach, shalom legoyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Yud Ches Be'iyar, Tavshin Ayin Hei, Parshas Behar, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 7 May, 2015. Webcasting from the State of Israel at its least savory. There's a connection, though I'm not sure how it works, between the wretched political system here and one of its results, which is an ugly political discourse of Lashon Hara. Evil speech, literally, words used unnecessarily that pollute the atmosphere. So there's to be a new government with the backing of 61 MKs only, which no one expects to last, and the result is the toxic cascades of verbal nastiness. J-Post's political reporter Gil Hoffman wrote under the headline, "Time for Revenge," referring to those politicians who have felt slighted by the prime minister, and what's significant is that none of them are politically opposed to him. Well, for sure, Bugi Herzog sneered, but of course, that's the opposition. In contrast, all of the MSM today was full of politicians on the right, who have a score to settle with Netanyahu for his mistreatment of them. Notice this has little to do with policy and everything to do with personal ego. And I suspect that the common denominator is that all those offended by him felt he did not see things their way and did not treat them as equals. I think this is a legacy of the dominance of the Zionist left that led the Israelis into independence in 1948 with their half-baked notions of democracy, half-baked in part because most of them grew up abroad in countries with no strong history of liberal democracy. For them, these social democrats, a government was a committee, as in the Central Committee of the Communist Party in the Soviet Union. Not that the first Israelis were communists, only that their notion of government was government by committee that takes votes and the majority opinion wins. Sort of like the kibbutz. On the kibbutz, the executive manager of the kibbutz, the secretary, who worked in an office and did not work in the fields, was not paid any more than a field hand. Indeed, nobody was paid anything, and everybody had the same size cottage. In the earliest truly communistic kibbutzim, a comrade did not even own his own clothes. There was, as on all kibbutzim, a communal laundry, and a comrade would take what was available each week in his or her size. There was zero competition in a material sense. No one envied his better-off neighbor because no such neighbor existed. On the kibbutz, with some jobs more pleasant than others, the members would rotate periodically. For example, someone who had little experience running the chicken coop might be given that job, and he learns about it over time, and when he gets it right, he is moved out to another job and replaced by someone who is as ignorant as he used to be. It's a perfect plan for inefficiency. For example, the new Ministress of Justice, Ayelet Shaked, got a B.S. in electrical engineering and computer science. She worked as a software engineer for Texas Instruments in Israel and managed marketing in the country for that firm. No background in the legal profession. Like Yair Lapid last time, that uneducated and especially about finance high school dropout who became Minister of Finance, Israeli politicians experience no discomfort with this system. They want to be cabinet ministers, and experience in the business of the ministry is not a requirement. So I think a lot of the bitterness against Bibi in his party and parties of the right is his disappointing them of all their demands for this ministry or that. Their self-esteem is wounded. Can't make everybody happy. And just in general, I suspect Netanyahu has never treated his staffers as equal partners. He is the leader. He has no partners. He is located on the other side of the political spectrum. When it comes to believing in government by committee, he doesn't come from that tradition. And now that he has only 61 supporters, he's not even through with dealing with his party and more aspirants for other ministries yet to be doled out, and losers will hold it against him when he hands a ministry over to someone else. And never mind any discussion about the different policies the competitors would pursue. And a word for yours truly, the chatter here this week and today about politics bores me and embarrasses me. It's another facet of the Israeli personality I wish the country would outgrow. How different things might be with a real democracy, with politicians who are chosen directly by the voters and not via these political parties run by central committees, as in the Soviet Union, which, as in the Soviet Union, are dominated by a few real big shots. It's being chosen by the big shots to have a place on a party list. That's how you get to be an MK, not because you have civilian backers who vote for you to be their representative. None of these MKs ever gets calls from constituents voicing their support for his vote the day before, or criticism of it. And so I'm going to drop this annoying news story, the putting together of a new government, the doling out of ministries. Far more important and worrisome was the story earlier in the week of the new Minister of Finance, Moshe Kahlon, wanting to see public transport in Jerusalem on Shabbos. No, not full service, but just for starters, some minivans. That's how it begins. He said, quote, "The people who need public transportation on Shabbat are those who don't have money to buy a car. I don't want them to have to pay for a taxi to visit their grandchildren," close quote. And what else do the lowest income people not have that he thinks they should have? Nicer clothes, a better apartment, so that they don't feel inferior to others, better schools, vacations abroad. How nice that he cares for this group, but not for their neighbors, who do keep Shabbos and will be disturbed by the vehicular traffic in their streets. The non-religious live in darkness when it comes to Shabbos, ignorant of its benefits, like creating a 25-hour zone of peace in which streets are empty of traffic and families and children walk and play in them with no fear of danger. The air is also healthier. And Shabbos has families sitting together at table with no distractions, no entertainment, no TV, no smartphone. All they have is each other. Here's an idea. What Israel might think about is not only restructuring the electrical system, but it's weak. In the modern age of conveniences, freeing more time away from work could be beneficial. From time to time, the idea of adopting a five-day work week here, like the rest of the world, is bandied about. It has its problems, that plan, but it might be sold and the problem solved if there was legislation strengthening Shabbat observance. Israel might think about Sunday as a day off, but in exchange, the observance of the Sabbath the day before, for real, nationwide. There's so much violation of the Sabbath these days, anyway, by the majority of Israelis who do violate the Fourth Commandment. They might be encouraged to give it up and give that Fourth Commandment a try by enforcing a real Sabbath. No television, no movie theaters, no restaurants. Let Sunday be a day for riding in the car to visit relatives or to the beach and go on family picnics. What an unusual society Israel would have in the world with massive Sabbath observance. Jewish lore teaches us that Messiah will come when all the Jews keep Shabbos 2 weeks in a row. And a new deal here in that regard might even lead to that.
ילד שזוחל כמו נער שמתפלל כמוני שמתגעגע לקרבת האל ילד שבוכה כמו נער שמחכה כמוני שמתגעגע לקרבת הבורא עוד לא הולך עוד לא מדבר מנסה להחזיק מפתח שחומק מבין אצבעותיו הטובות בחלב האור הגנוז בעיניו כל החיים לפניו לנר שדלק על ראשו געגועיו ילד שצוחק ענק ומתאפק תפסתי כבר את המפתח הנה הוא שוב חומק ילד מתיישב הנער מתחיל לחשב ואני כבר מזמן מתגעגע לתשובת הלב כמו הילד שמנסה לתפוס ולא מצליח עצוב השוב אנחנו מתקרבים ומתרחקים לאור הגנוז הנסתר חיים בין אסור למותר לצחוק הפשוט והטוב געגועי
Yeah, I'm more perturbed by Moshe Kahlon wanting, in the guise of compassion for the poorest of the poor, calling for more Sabbath violation than the political verbal catfights between our politicians. It smacks of the never-ending aggression by the enlightened against Jewishness. Take another example. Before sunrise yesterday, Jews moved into an empty building in Jerusalem that had once belonged to the Yemenite community, that created the neighborhood the Arabs today call Silwan, which is a corruption of the Hebrew Shilom. It was, in fact, a synagogue which fell into Arab hands because during the first real intifada of the 1930s, the Brits forced all the Jews out of the community they had built because they chose not to defend them from the Arab barbarians who kept trying to murder them. This community had been established on barren land in the early 1880s, a famous landmark in the non-Zionist movement was the Biluim groups who came from Russia and Romania who rose up to the land, emigrated to live here following the pogroms against Jews in that part of the world in the wake of the assassination of Russian Tsar Alexander III in 1881. The overwhelmingly Ashkenazi founders glorified in memories of the Biluim found a community already in place when they got here. Yemenite Jews who had come as a group to live in Eretz Yisrael. This historic community, which vanished in the 1930s, here on Wednesday, saw one of their important synagogues repossessed by perfectly legal means, but leave it to the enlightened to protest. Yet another NGO, surely supported by anti-Jews outside Eretz Yisrael, called Ir Amim, which means City of Peoples, in the plural, hint, hint, not just one people, they admitted the sale was legal, but nonetheless, Ateret Kohanim, the yeshiva which took possession, quote, wrongly seized the property from the family that lived there while the state turned a blind eye, close quote. You got that? It's legal, they admit, but wrong. Teilhard Cohen-Im legally bought the property from the Abu Nab family, who had been living in these three apartments. Ir Amim claimed it was another in a, quote, series of incursions into Palestinian homes in recent months. It called the Jerusalem Yeshiva, the Holy City, a settler organization. Quote, the state supports Teilhard Cohen-Im, and this policy degrades Jerusalem and should stop, close quote. Ir Amim, meaning City of Peoples, tells you its aim, its philosophy, the very title. You know, the Jews have no monopoly over Jerusalem. It belongs no less to other peoples, starting with the ancient ones. I think this organization's founding NGO mission statement says Ir Amim is dedicated to an egalitarian Jerusalem. Oh, how nice that sounds. These anti-Jews of Jewish extraction spend not one penny on criticizing the reality that there are 21 officially Arab states, members of the Arab League of States, which means every non-Arab in them is by definition a second-class resident. Ir Amim says nothing of the 56 officially Muslim countries with capital cities. But Israel, well, the Jews are not entitled to their own Jewish country and Jewish capital. That's racist. Like those Orthodox Jews who say non-Orthodox Jews are not Jews, which is not true. There's no truth to that statement. Ir Amim stands for an egalitarian Jerusalem, which sounds intellectually like a kissing cousin of the moral equivalence between Jews and the ancient ones. Indeed, the Muslim Public Relations agent in the Oval Office, in an interview with the LTF last summer, said, after lavishing much praise on Israel for its accomplishments and especially its military prowess and ability to defend itself, so he does not worry for Israel's physical survival, quote, I think the question really is how Israel does survive and create a Jewish state that maintains its democratic and civic traditions, that is also reflective of the best values of those who founded Israel. And in order to do that, it has consistently been my belief that you have to find a way to live side by side in peace with Palestinians. You have to recognize that they have a legitimate claim, and this is their land and neighborhood as well, close quote. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the nuclear core of the fires of anti-Jew hatred in our generation. This is ground zero. For this, we Jews are the targets all the time of Muslim murderers because we stole Palestine from the Palestinians, and we have to recognize, as His Holiness Imam Barak Hussein says, that Palestinians have legitimate claims, and this is their land as well. In other words, the Jews are in possession of their land, to which they have as much right as the Jews have to their land. Both are ancient peoples who call this real estate their ancient homeland, and that Israel does not respect their legitimate claims to this land, well, what do you expect when Muslims want to kill them? This is a quote from an interview last August, which should have been answered by the Prime Minister of Israel and the President of Israel and the Speaker of the Knesset of Israel and the two chief rabbis, with a declaration saying, no, these Arabs claiming to be ancient Palestinians have no legitimate claims, and there is not a shred of historical evidence that there ever was such a nation that called this land their ancient homeland. This is the ancient homeland of the Jewish people exclusively. And all other claims are bogus anti-Semitic lies, quote, quote. Of course, that never happened. But I've no doubt this is the nuclear core of all our woes. And the victory in this generation of world anti-Jewry has been injecting these lies into the public arena. I mean, the Nations United in New York and Geneva is functionally obsessed with Israel's illegal and immoral and unjust possession of land belonging to its rightful ancient people. This is why the UN spends a third of its time and money on Israel's criminal refusal to let the victims of Zionism have an independent state for this nationality as old as the Jews. It's another variation on the bleeding of NGOs like Ir Amim that sees in Israel's exclusive monopolistic rule in Jerusalem a crime. It should be an egalitarian Jerusalem, they say. Now, the upside of this behavior by our enemies, non-Jewish and Jewish alike, Yeramim's operatives are Israeli Jews, is, at least for yours truly, heartwarming, if admittedly a twisted form of praise. I mean, this hostility to the Jewish people is a form of recognition of the truth of the Jews' religion. It's a singling out of the Jewish people for treatment unique on the planet. Secular Israelis bemoan the reality of that of the 193 member states in the UN. Only Israel is treated as it is. As the only member state that can ever sit on the Security Council, as the only member state among over 100 admitted since World War II whose national movement was branded a racist movement. The Palestinians have repeatedly demanded a state that is perfectly Judenline, no Jews in it, and nobody, certainly not the New York Times, says a thing. The Balis demand such an independent state, and Israel, a quarter of whose citizens are Arabs, is smeared as a racist nation. All of these bizarre mental behaviors are testimony, for yours truly, of the truth of Jewishness. Secular Israelis moan over their isolation at the UN, and I smile in wonder at the realization of the prophecy of the Gentile prophet Bilam over 3,000 years ago in the Sinai wilderness, that this will be a nation that dwells alone and is not counted among the nations. That's what the Torah says. Here's Yeramim protesting the legal return of Jewish ownership of this erstwhile community synagogue, demanding an egalitarian city, not one ruled by greedy Jews who won't share it. They make me, if not laugh, then smile.
Stam lehaser, stam lefatpe, stam ledaber, stam leshaker, stam ledaber al hayim, lehitchazek, umin astam lichtov shirim, stam lekashkesh ulefashpesh, להתחדש, להתרגש, סתם להיות או לא להיות, זה סתם שטויות, הכל שטויות, סתם לחפש ולאפס, להתפוצץ, להתאפס, פשוט סתם. סתם להרכיב, סתם, סתם לפרק, זה סתם להתנתק, להתברק, סתם להקדים, סתם לאחר או לבטל, סתם למהר, סתם לא לרצות להיגמר, סתם להצדיק, להצטדק, להשתנק, להתרחק, סתם להיות או לא להיות, בינינו זה הכל שטויות, סתם לתרץ, להתאמץ, להתנוצץ, להתחפש, הכל סתם. לבקש, להתבקש, בסתם לכתוב, בסתם גם להיות כתוב, להתגאות, ומן הסתם להיות עלוב, בסתם לרוץ, להיעצר, להשתקר, להתפורר, גם להיות או לא להיות, סתם שטויות, הכל שטויות, סתם לעלות ולעלות, ליפול חזק, להתגלות, פשוט סתם.
העולם הזה פוסט-או מפני, העולם. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa.
Well, speaking before of the fractured Jewish identity of these NGO types, like Breaking the Silence mentioned last time and this evening, Yeramim, we'll know tomorrow the results of the election in the UK and the fate of Edward Miliband. In some of the talkbacks here today, there was argument over his Jewishness or lack thereof. As I see it, to cut through the confusion, Miliband is a Jew who is not Jewish. It's as simple as that. And there's no contradiction. To be a Jew can be and is a legal matter according to Jewish law, which is just like Gentile law in many ways. For example, a person born in the United States is an American citizen, which is not the same as being American in one's heart and the way one lives his life. Consider the Walkers, father and son, who spied for the commies. Consider CIA traitor Aldrich Ames, who did too. All three of them, by their betrayal, responsible for the deaths of Americans and American collaborators. Were these three Americans? Well, sure, when considering the word as a legal category, but they were not Americans as an adjective describing the way they live their lives. And it's no different. Ed Miliband is legally a Jew, but he is most certainly not Jewish in his thinking and behavior. Which is why a poll in the Jewish Chronicle this week claimed that 70% of the Jews in the UK today would not be voting for him when, like their American cousins, who traditionally voted for the Democrats, these were Labour Party types and had been for generations, like seriously Jewish Jews in America who now vote Republican because of the anti-Jew in the Oval Office. British Jews have been forced to abandon their political home because, although legally a Jew, existentially, Miliband is not Jewish. Miliband was born to a mother who was a Jew, but she, it has been reported, was a devotee of Karl Marx, that archetypal modern post-Jew. Just like Miliband, he was a non-Jewish Jew. No contradiction intended. Indeed, that was the title of a very famous essay by Trotsky's biographer and soulmate, Isaac Deutscher, the non-Jewish Jew. And indeed, this has been a description of millions who are not of the radical persuasion, like my own family. They were sentimentally attached to the Jewish people, but did not believe as the Jewish people have believed, and certainly did not live Jewish lives. And that is the bulk of the American Jewish community over the last century and more. Oh, they take pride in belonging to this people that produced a Marx, a Freud, an Einstein, an Eisenstein in Russian cinema, the legion of Jews in Hollywood's creative and business community, the physicians like Jonas Salk, the musicians like Leonard Bernstein and George Gershwin. But as to living Jewish lives, they did not. And thus their children and grandchildren don't even have that sentimental connection. Jonas truly became religious, paradoxically, because I love these non-religious Jews so much. In order to produce more of them, all we could do was become religious, because their rationalizations notwithstanding, it's a scientific fact that only religious Jews produce the next generation of this nation. Which brings us back to Moshe Kahlon wanting to degrade the sanctity of Shabbos in the holy city. Not a good idea.
כל העולם לא נברא אלא בשבילי נמצא כשהעולם נברא בשבילי צריך אני לראות ולעיין בכל עת בתיקון העולם ולמלות חסון העולם ולהתפלל בעבורם צריך כל אדם לומר כל העולם לא נברא אלא בשבילי כי צריך כל אדם לומר אוי אוי כל העולם לא נברא אלא בשבילי נמצא כשהעולם נברא בשבילי צריך אני לראות ולעיין בכל עת בתיקון העולם ולמלות חסרון העולם ולהתפלל בעבורם כשהעולם נברא בשבילי צריך אני לראות ולעיין בכל עת בתיקון העולם ולמלות חסרון העולם ולהתפלל בעבורם לא נברא אלא בשבילי כל העולם לא נברא אלא בשבילי כל העולם לא נברא אלא בשבילי
Last thought for the evening. It's been very interesting to observe how various opinionators have reacted to the Garland, Texas takedown of two would-be Muslim massacre freaks. The best commentary was Andrew McCarthy's on the National Review site, as he sees the issue is far bigger than Muhammad cartoons. Even if the shallow and the foolish have dismissed Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer as offensive provocateurs, like Fox's blowhard Bill O'Reilly and the vulgar Donald Trump, who know nothing of the Muslim world. They think the massacre artists are radical extremists outside the nice mainstream of moderates who should not be insulted. I say, nonsense. Look at Egypt. Muslim Brotherhood devotee Obama drove Mubarak from office, and the people in their majority voted for the Brotherhood, which is the birthplace of the idea, burning in the fever swamps of these Muslim massacre freaks. Brains. Geller's critics are shallow, foolish, and ignorant cowards. Okay, that's it for this evening and this week. I'll be back, God willing, on Sunday. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Meretz Yisrael.